When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up today.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, I wanted to talk to you guys about the MLB Roto Baller Challenge, hosted by our friends at Fantrax and Fantrax.com. Fantrax is the most customizable free fantasy baseball platform in the industry, and that's why we're hosting over our 2022 Roto Baller Challenge over on Fantrax. If you want the greatest fantasy experience, sign up for a free Roto Baller Challenge team today by going to rotoballer.com/challenge. All leagues are free to join, and you get to compete against Roto Baller writers and readers for a shot at $500 cash grand prize. All new Fantrax users get entered into a free giveaway to win a signed official MLB Wander Franco jersey. If you want to get entered to win a Wander Franco jersey and you're new to Fantrax, go to Fantrax.com/Bubba and sign up for your free Fantrax account today. Once you have your Fantrax account, go to rotoballer.com/challenge to join the challenge league, but go to Fantrax.com/Bubba to create your Fantrax account, be entered to win a Wander Franco autographed jersey. But for now, welcome to Benched with Bubba. And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 456. I have a special guest returning to the show to talk about some recent news, some main event drafting in Las Vegas, Nevada, and much, much more. You obviously know who this person is. You can find him on Twitter at Jeff_Erickson and all his awesome work at rotowire.com, SiriusXM, and much, much more. Jeff, how are we doing, my friend?
It's Talk Too Much Tuesday. I'm thrilled to be here, Bubba. Thanks for having me.
I know you got your golf going on. You got your SiriusXM. You got a little bit of everything.
Yeah, got Fred and I tonight doing a OC tonight. It's tis the season. Draft order for my second main. Nice. I'm in another draft with Posma. Yay!
I saw that. It's crazy. It's okay. I love talking golf with you, but we have a lot of baseball talk. But I will ask you this much because of everything, the craziness that's happening, is Tiger playing?
I saw he did his practice round today. He may just like to play with Charlie. I don't know. But, boy, how great is it to be Charlie? But get to go to play Augusta. I mean, that's ridiculous. Yep. But it's only the only thing we'll be talking about next week for at least – well, by the time I do the next Gaming Golf podcast, we'll know probably because it'll be Tuesday next week. True. But, yeah, if he does play, oh, my gosh, just bananas.
We've got Masters Thursday on opening day as well. Right? Like it's just a bananas day. As you said, it's going to be absolutely awesome. And Tigers just makes it even crazier. So that'll be fun to talk about going forward. But what was a lot of fun to follow along with, because unfortunately I couldn't make it, was you guys in Vegas for the NFPC main event weekend and other drafts, of course, had an awesome time between the parties, the social out, just the drafting in general, the camaraderie that took place. It was pretty darn amazing. But for me, the real fun of this is like texting Toby and other people about their drafts. And you got the luxury of sitting next to this wonderful individual for your main event. And we joke about it because every time we've done barf or it seems like any league we're in together, we're next to each other somehow.
Of course.
It works. And so I laughed. I'm like, oh, somebody else gets to do it now. So what was it like first drafting next to the guy you know is taking Garrett Cole number two and probably a bunch of other pitchers?
Something we talked about the night before, too. He even told me, I'm taking Garrett Cole. And, you know, I know Toby. I mean, he's going to go pitchers. It informed my second round pick. I knew that if I wanted to get Liam Hendricks, I would have to take him. I did in the second round. It was right before Toby there. But it's great. I mean, This is one of two podcast leagues. I'm doing a main event cast Thursday, and have Toby, going to have Rudy Gamble, going to have Brock Monster, and of course we're also going to get Maddie Wood, so nice. Maddie Davis. So we're talking a lot of people talk a lot. It wasn't quite as loud as the Sporer table, but the Sporer Justin Mason table, but it's still a lot of people who do a lot of talking. That's one of the things about the NFBC main event. It's really cool. Is there's a lot of us that are information providers, fantasy information providers, that are also doing the main event. It used to be just a couple of us, and now there's a lot more of us. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was fun to see, like, all you guys there. It felt like almost First Pitch Invades Vegas type feel to it, the way it was all going on. So it was cool to see. I will definitely make a point to be there next year. Things just didn't allow for it this year, but I will head to Vegas for sure. Drafting, we'll see, but I'll be there for sure and experience it. But let's talk about your team some more. I heard you guys run through a lot of it on the Sunday Night Show, you and Scott, sure, which is definitely the staple of the podcasting fantasy deal. But how do you feel just in general? Like, I know, like, we always have our pros and our cons. Like, what do you like and dislike about the squad after you know, it's been about 48 hours or so, 72 hours.
I'm a little light on speed. I'm a little heavy on Cody Bellinger in my life. Get that update 2 hours later. He struck out 14 times. Okay, great. But we were talking about with Scott, and you might have heard that. You look at the hitters that went after that. I guess it was here, Ketel Marte, who were within the next round of picks, hitters at least. I could have waited to Brian Reynolds, and he runs a similar amount. We'll see. Bellinger didn't die. Okay. It's not over with yet, but you look at my draft, and I made some decisions here and there, and every decision, every consequence came to fruition. Like, okay, I'm not going to take Tommy Edman. I'm going to take Alek Manoah. I know that Toby and Jody Ryan have pitchers. Maybe they would have loved Manoah too. I don't know. I know I love Manoah and didn't want to miss him. I only had one starting pitcher at that point. This is at 613, pick 88. But that cost me Tommy Edman. It cost me Dalton Varsho. No, I'm not taking Dalton Varsho. He's already had a catcher, and I'm not taking Dalton Varsho. But that's another speed guy off the board. I know Toby took him, but I'm not saying he's wrong for doing it, but I've got some discomfort taking him in the top 100. And I already had Will Smith, and I'm planting my flag on that Will Smith all the time. Taking Will Smith cost me Byron Buxton. But as I admitted to Scott, I wasn't even thinking about taking Byron Buxton. I was like, oh, if Will Smith comes here, I'm going to take Will Smith. And then I need a pitcher. I need a starting pitcher. Hadn't had one yet. So I know, knowing these things going in, it kind of gives you some blind spots. And that Buxton was a blind spot miss. Later on, I thought I could wait on Jonathan VR. In the main event, you can't wait. I mean, even the Thursday ADP, the three main events on Thursday suggested I could have waited. But the hell with that. I mean, if you know you need it, you know you like the guy, don't play that I'm guessing I'm going to wait. After that, I resolved not to wait. And that worked to my benefit because I did get Jake McGee at 15-3. We needed a second closer.
It's turning out pretty good after today's news. Yep.
Second closer and a half. And, I was thinking maybe half closer because we still don't know if he's a full-time closer guy. Yeah. But nonetheless, I did go out and take him. We took him. Tim Schuler and I are partners. I got to make sure I give him credit. He was pushing me on McGee too. And we're like, I'm not going to wait again. It's 26 more picks before we get another player. That's the thing with these 15 team snake drafts, and especially if you're one of the ends and it's the main event, get your guy, get what you need. Don't play the ADP game.
A couple questions for things you did mention there, and the Jake McGee thing's great because that's been a fun Twitter. You've been busy today. You'll catch up on that.
I replied to Zach a little bit. There's a victory. The victory lappers are out in full force, I'm sure. Yeah.
Between the three closer things that we're going to discuss throughout this, like, there's all kinds of fun stuff out there. But a couple things you mentioned there. So it is a 15 team league. Like, I talk a lot of 12s and 15s, which we go back and forth, but 15s, we always say it's just so much obviously larger of a league. Almost safety at times feels better because the replacement's just not there type situation. So you took pick three. Well, you received pick three. Was your KDS to try to be towards the top, or it was? Okay. That's why I was wondering.
Five is my first choice. Okay. Five. I love five this year. Cause you can't miss with those five, whether it's Turner, Cole, Ramirez, Bichette, or Soto. I know I'm getting someone I love there. Mm-hmm. After that, I have to make a decision. I have to decide Vlad or not to Vlad or not to Vlad?
Yeah.
I have, or do I push a starter up? Do I go, you know, Burns or DeGrom there? Or is it Kyle Tucker or is it Bryce? Who is it going to be? Of course, I got seven on Saturday, and Posma's eight on me in that one too. So super fun there. But yeah, it's a real choice. I haven't really decided hard where, if I don't get in the top five, where I want to be.
Okay.
Normally, I like 7 and 8 for the draft. That's this debate you have to have. You think about what's the best first round pick? Where are you most comfortable drafting? Well, generally speaking, I like the middle. I think Jen Stad feels the same way. I know Ariel Cohen feels the same way. You're not as beholden to the runs. What you can do with your pitching is usually, you know, you can do a lot more things with your pitching 7, 8, 9. So I generally speaking, I'm pretty comfortable where I'm going to be drafting 7th on Saturday. So it'll be fun to see the contrast 4 spots down the line.
Definitely. And it will be a big contrast, like you're saying. And I'm with you. The more, especially in the 15s, like I really want to be in that middle. Because
yeah.
If you do miss out on a run, it's like the next thing you know, like it's just, like Eno was talking about it on Rates and Barrel. Like he thought he'd get one of these 3 closers and 4 picks later, they're all gone. Like, yeah. And he was just on the turn. That was so, God forbid you do something else. So it does make a big difference. One of the players you mentioned in the top 5, there was Juan Soto. And I just want to get your thoughts on this because I did a little digging into the ADP like everybody else is. Did you know that him and Trey Turner were the only 2 players to go number 1 overall in any of the 13 drafts?
I knew that Soto did it in the room. Someone in the room took him at 1 overall. I did not know those were the only 2.
Yeah, so what my question is, because I love Juan Soto. I think he's a phenomenal ball player, deserves to be in the top 5, as you mentioned. I was surprised the only other number 1. Like, J-Ram made sense. Maybe a pitcher jumped up.
I thought Cole would be for sure.
Yeah, so that just stood out to me. Like, when you look at ADP, everything, like, there's all kinds of arguments for different things. But that stood out to me. The other thing I wanted to ask you is you talked about when to jump. And that's, like, the hardest thing to figure out at times because you want to jump, and then in your head, you have, like, the angel on one shoulder, the devil on the other. Like, which one do I do? And it's – and then you say you start going for it. And when you look at the ADP from these first 13 drafts, there's a bunch of players, like 60 pick differences in ADP, a max and mins. So depending on what league you're in, it could totally be a different story. How do you kind of decide when it's time to jump? Because like you said, some of them you didn't. Then you said, screw it, I'm going for it. How is it? Like, I guess I'll just put this. Joel asked a question in the chat.
Yeah.
When do you differentiate your rankings versus what ADP is showing? So when do you trust your rankings to jump the ADP essentially?
I think you start doing that early. Maybe 5th or 6th round. I mean, it depends on the player. How much do you really feel strongly about the player? How much do you really want him? How much does he fit what you're doing? If you've got Vlad in the 1st round and you feel really strongly about Tim Anderson, you jump him. If you know, and that's just an example. I mean, there are other stolen base guys, but it could be as early as the 2nd round. If that's how it, your team, you want to build your team. I think team build is way more important than rankings and, of course, way more important than ADP.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. That's kind of how I look at it, and that's why we do all those DCs, NFBC 50s, just to kind of get an idea. And obviously, things changed this year with no news for like 3 months. Like, you didn't have
wild.
ADP to stuck, basically. So really didn't give you a whole – and now everything's just going crazy. But that's kind of the whole purpose of doing those, is to have an idea of when do I need to roster construct, essentially. Like, screw the rankings and go. So that part is quite interesting. Looking back, like you kind of already said, you know, the goods and the bads of your draft, but just looking back in general, what were some of your takeaways just from the main events, from what you saw, what you heard, all that kind of stuff?
You know, there's always Casey Chaz on Lucas Giolito. Lucas Giolito is now a 2nd round pick.
Yep.
So it is. I mean, and guess what? Trailing Casey Chaz is a smart move.
Yep.
I mean, let's face it. There's a reason why he waits a little while to jump in on drafts too. I mean, he doesn't want all of his stuff out there, but it gets out. Obviously everybody wants to know what Phil did. The funny thing is I didn't go and look at Phil's board. What a waste. Wasted opportunity for me there to learn from the master. But you know, it's hard too when you've got 1,000 people you want to talk to and see. You know, James Anderson and I were both picking from the 3 spot, and I had to hustle down just to see his board. They're trying to shoo us out a little bit, not Greg and them, but Bellagio folks turning off some screens. And like, I want to see these boards still. Yeah. It's not very often that you get access to boards from great players, so you want to see that. But other things that, you know, obviously, you know, there's certain guys that climb, others that fall. You know, the echo chamber where you hear – the guy that's on your list and you hear him get picked at another table, you're like, don't hear that in everybody, but everybody hears it. Brady Tinker, his voice is a booming voice, and he was apparently dialing it down too. And I love Brady. He's awesome. But he announces that pick, and his broadcaster voice, it's going to get heard. And if you, you know, further, not that we don't know these players. We all know the players. Yeah. We all have our ideas on this. If you're paying $1,700 for a league, you better know who these players are exactly. And have a better idea. But it's like, oh, yeah, I forgot about him. I mean, I missed a couple spots. I picked Taiwan Walker when I could have picked my guy, Carlos Hernandez. Now, that may not be a fatal error. It might not even be an error. But point is, I've been drafting Carlos Hernandez everywhere. And I thought, okay, wasn't yet even on my list. And of course, Carlos Hernandez goes after that. And I'm like, that's my guy. He's everybody's guy. It's not just my guy. I don't have ownership.
Well, that's such a great point, because that's what I laugh about when I always joke, like one of my pet peeves on like podcast, Twitter, wherever, when people say someone's not talking about someone enough. It's like, you guys just aren't paying attention because there's so much content out there. I'm like, come on, guys. Like, this guy's probably been mentioned 12 times already. So it's just like, except Mason, I'll give him, he had Cedric Mullins last year. That's his. He brings it up all the time. But we bring it up for him, though. Yeah, it's true. It's better we bring it up so that we don't have to hear him talk about it more. It works out better. Danielle taught me that one.
Yeah. I think we pump Justin up more than Danielle does, even too. I mean, she pumps him down.
Yeah. Yeah. So totally different there. But it is fun. It is fun to hear the different voices. And one thing you did say there with Casey Chaw, just in general, and it'll be one of the last things that I'll talk about for this main event, is I love looking at the ADP, and it's like, I don't even play in the main event. I play 15 team leagues, but I play a lot of 12s. I play the OCs, but for me, it's just, you said the best of the best are here. So it's good to see where they're going to kind of either A, justify what you're thinking, or hey, do I need to go look at this some more? And I think that's why I tried to tell other people that don't even play on the NFBC platform, period. I tell them, just like, hey, just use this as a tool. And it can be quite interesting to see, like, Austin Riley dropped like pick 82. You see where all these other injured guys had to give. Yeah, exactly. There's always, if something moves up, something comes down. You know, it's just physics, but in ADP. So it's a ton of fun in that regard.
I got one other thing I want to throw in there too, is my league in particular was risk averse when it comes to injuries.
Okay.
You know, I got the max pick on Tatis. As we saw from like Todd Zola and Rob Silver, just saying that you got a max pick on somebody isn't necessarily like, good job. You know, it feels
good in the moment, but then you start getting an uneasy feeling too.
Taking Tatis, of course, it was a little, this is my first, you know, league that I've gotten him in. Probably will be my last, but because I got him later than anyone else by a mile. It was after the first break. We take break, there's always a break after the first 10 rounds. And I even talked to Scott Jensen. I was like, hey, am I taking crazy pills? I have to take a chance on this if he comes. I'd like, I want to talk to Toby on Thursday, see why he did not take him. But
he's super risk averse. I can tell you that right now. He's
and the whole room is that way. And it's a smart way to play. It's a completely smart way to play, especially when it's all your money and all that. Yeah. But at some point, you have to make that determination whether it's worth it or not. And I'll tell you what, that discouraged me from taking future risks, whether it's a prospect or another injured guy.
Well, and that's the big point to it. Like, you can take a risk. That's been discussed by many. But with like no IL spots, 7-player benches, you only get one of those spots, basically, because you need those other roster spots. So, yeah, you take them then. You can take them on Luis Castillo, almost a pick 200, Flaherty at 300, whatever you want to do. Or take the prospects, like O'Neill Cruz back to AAA. So now he's sitting there for 2 weeks or whatever, but that's the risk you took. So I get that there. And to the risk factor is I draft safe also, but I could see in the overall competition, thus the main event, taking that risk. Because as you know, and anybody else knows, if for some reason Tatis does come back healthy in like the end of May and you get like 4 months of Tatis, that's still pretty darn good, like really good. So that's the risk reward you're taking with that toll platform.
Yeah. I cannot believe they sent the Pirates sent down O'Neill Cruz, by the way. Isn't that just dumb? Yeah.
Didn't we just,
I don't get that.
And then now they have no chance to get the incentive to get rookie of the year. It's just well, I guess he could still get it if he sits out 2 weeks or whatever.
The Pirates are jerks. I think that's really the real takeaway from here. Bob Nutting is a jerk. I think that's what we can take away from
Is it an NL Central pill they all take?
Maybe so. you know, well, we'll see with the Reds. I think Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo have a chance of breaking the team. But I also think pitchers, the service time thing isn't nearly as important to manage. Yeah. There's countless other risk items there. But with hitters, I get it. I understand the incentives are there for the Cubs to mess around with Chris Bryant's service time. It still makes it no less cynical, but I get it. I'd hate to see it there.
In the end, business is business, as much as it sucks for us, the fans, us, the fantasy players. But it's like, if you, it is what it is, and that's where the CBA needs to fix it. But I don't know if it ever will after what we just saw.
They just had a chance, and they did not.
I don't think – I think it's just one of those things.
Good thing they cured tanking too, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's working out so well, so fast. But you kind of hinted on it already, so I'll jump to it with the Reds. You talk about Lodello and company. They've already said Luis Castillo is going to start the season on the IL. Very good chance Mike Minor starts the season on the IL. Mm-hmm. So but then we hear yesterday it's like San Martin and some others might have a chance. Who do you think kind of maybe leaves spring with a chance to give us some early starts?
So they just announced before the pod today that Tony Santillan is going to the bullpen. So that's one less name. So you're looking at three prospects, Green, Lodello, Graham Ashcraft, who also can throw 100. And then you're looking at Reaver San Martin. Who else? It gets pretty slim pretty fast, but there's other names. Name that people aren't going to be on is Ben Lively, who was in the KBO last year. An original Red, believe it or not. He was traded for Marlon Byrd. If you want to go back in the way machine there. I'm looking at the other guys on this list, and Justin Dunn's also going to begin the year on the AL. The only two sure things are Tyler Molly on opening day and Vladimir Gutierrez beginning the year in the rotation, probably not ending it in the rotation. Other than that, I think there's a lot of moving parts. I think Castillo and Minor both begin the year on the IL, and then it's going to be pretty slim after that.
Yeah, I guess a lot of short outings, long relievers, kind of a mix mash of fun in Cincinnati. On the same note, Lucas Sims, they officially said he's going to start the year on the IL. They kind of all knew he was going to, but it's official now. Is it Luis Sessa, or are we looking somewhere else here? Because according to MLB.com, it's Luis Sessa, but we know Ryan Roof does great work for you guys, and we got the other guys at Reliever Recon and many others. It's all over the board.
Bobby Nightingale was also saying that it could be Art Warren. I think it's going to be a committee. I think it's going to be more of the same frustration that we've been dealing with David Bell. Maybe some mid-inning changes, who knows? Although Amir Garrett isn't there to jerk around anymore, so we got that. But I think Warren and Sess are the top two guys. Don't sleep on Hunter Strickland, Dari Moretta, Tony Santillan. They might all be part of it there until Sims is ready. I think Sims has got the best chance to lead the team in saves, but leading the team might be 12 saves.
True. That's the conundrum of it all. But they all, as they always say, and I said it for years, like the Royals and others, bad teams still get like 50 to 60 wins too. So you might run into some way or another.
I'm thinking more just because they're going to spread them around. I think they're going to go poor man Rays on us, or Mariners for that matter. That plenty of enough saves out there, but not enough
for one legit closer. That makes a ton of sense. Before we get to a few other closer questions, I do want to get your thoughts on this, because I think it's definitely a guessing game, but humidors in all these ballparks now. Boog Shambi's come out and said he got a report. And I'm like, and first thing in my head is I've been screaming this for a long time, saying this can kind of even the playing field if you do it properly. Each ballpark plays with a different ball, but it kind of neutralizes park factors. We'll see if that actually happens. But how are you approaching this? Because this could really change things, even though we're still kind of blind.
I mean, honestly, we're guessing some. It's dimensions too. In some cases, Miami, Seattle might help the ball fly a little bit more. At least that's the theory. It's supposed to neutralize humidity, basically, as a factor. We'll see if that works in Washington, D.C. in July or August there, or Cincinnati or anywhere else in the Midwest and Eastern Seaboard, where the ball seems to fly out more in the summertime. I don't know why you would ever want to discourage offense right now, but that's another story for another day.
Yeah. We still don't know what baseball we're using, Jeff.
So yeah, I know. It's just, and they're not going to tell us.
No.
We'll wait for Dr. Meredith Wills to tell us that they've changed it yet again.
It's going to be a grab bag. This game will be different than the next. It'll be so much fun. Some more closer news, though. The Giants, they basically said Jake McGee is going to be the closer. Everyone that asked me the entire offseason, I said it's like I thought it'd be 65-35. McGee, Duvall, just what they did last year with McGee. That's just what they're going to do until McGee falls apart. That's just how it's going to go. Rodgers will even sneak in there. So you said you grabbed McGee, you drafted McGee in your main event. Are you moving him up a bunch in your rankings, or just kind of a, yeah, he's going to get it, but still not like an overwhelming amount situation?
I actually had more saves for McGee over Duvall to begin with. So no, I haven't changed my projection today. I might go take another look at it and tweak it a little bit, because I also think it's not locked down 100%. He is the closer every single time sort of situation. I think he's a pretty good pitcher. I think he did a pretty good job last year. He's a one pitch pitcher though, for the most part. He's not, he threw the fastball at 90% of the time last year. Just he has to locate it well and get good movement, and that seems to work. But I also think that Gabe Kapler will occasionally use others. McGee got hurt for a little bit last year. Rogers was very good. He just doesn't get guys to swing and miss a whole lot there. And then Duvall is a wild card. He could be dominant, or he could be in AAA. He walked a ton of guys in AAA last year, and that's the thing that worries me a little bit.
Yeah, that's the big – you nailed on it all. Like Rogers, I always loved. He just doesn't strike guys out, but – he's darn legit. He gets the ground balls, makes things happen. And Duvall, he's electric. But the reason no one really knew about him until about September last year is because he walked the farm every time he's had a chance to be up there. So,
and I hate that for my closer.
Yep. As a Giants fan, between Brian Wilson and others, I've experienced that too many times. So it's a lot of fun. Blake Treinen going to L.A. now. Everyone was like, oh, Kinley's in Atlanta. It's Blake Treinen's job. And Dave Roberts flat out said that we're going to use Treinen in high leverage situations. Treinen says he prefers to be in high leverage situations. That opens it up potentially for Daniel Hudson. How are you approaching this in LA?
I think it's going to be 55-35-10x. I don't know what the 10 is. You know, it could be Craig Kimbrell for all we know still someday. It could be Bruce Dark or Adderall. It could be, you know, I think Roberts is going to, you know, I think he's still going to go to Treinen more often than not, but there'll be knots also. There'll be times, like you said, a high leverage situation will come up in the seventh or eighth, and he's fine doing that. He likes that. So that's all good. But I still think he gets more saves than anybody else in that bullpen. It might not be top 10 closer number of saves.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing, is everyone all of a sudden pushed him up their ranking so highly when the Jansen deal happened. It's almost like you got to backpedal that a bit now, because yep, he's not going to be that locked in guy that everyone was hoping for. The Pittsburgh Pirates, they, besides just, you know, the O'Neill Cruz stuff, they said pretty much Bednar and Stratton are going to be splitting the role.
They said that right at the very end of the draft, and Toby was happy to show me the tweet before he took Stratton, so that was fun.
So that's a tough one.
He goes Pittsburgh closer Chris Stratton. I've had Stratton a lot of places, so I'm fine with that. And if I have a Bednar share, it's one. I can't quite remember if I do though. I think Bednar is a very good pitcher, but I think the Pirates would prefer to use a veteran and, you know, treat him like Rich Rodriguez and trade him if possible. So, and they're truly a terrible team, especially once they sent O'Neill Cruz down. So,
Yeah, that was my thoughts. That's why I have a ton of Stratton in like DCs, because I figured they'll let Bednar do his thing and then they'll trade him. That was my whole thought. This is what they do. But we'll have to wait and see. It might still happen that way, because that makes sense for their system.
Well, they don't have any incentive to trade Bednar yet. He's young and cheap, where Stratton's old. And
former Giants prospect. It's been a while. So
starting pitcher.
Yeah. He went over, I believe it was in the Reynolds deal, or maybe it was the McCutcheon deal, now I think about it. Which was the Reynolds deal. Never mind. Same one. Yes. I try to blank that from my memory.
Yeah, well, we all have our bad trades, but it happens. Yeah.
Yes, it does. Sticking with Pittsburgh, one more thing. So apparently 5 days ago, Ke'Bryan Hayes tweaked his ankle, and the news came out today that this happened. He's day-to-day. He's doing pretty much all baseball activities except running, which I guess leaves you kind of optimistic, still slightly concerned. What's your thoughts on Ke'Bryan Hayes right now?
Well, you have to run in baseball more often than not. And so that's a problem, especially because the trade-off with getting, when you get Ke'Bryan Hayes, you're banking on 10 stolen bases ish. At the trade-off for less power. And so, you know, you're losing that part of the benefit of the bargain. Yeah. He's pretty much a don't draft after that. Cause you're not getting 25 to 30 homers. At least we don't think we are. There's upside. There's still that upside. And he hit with power when he first got called up in 2020. But he didn't hit with power in the minors either. So he might come. It's still a lot of times prospects, it takes a while for the power to grow in, but this is, you know, last year was such an injury marred year, different injury, It's not like he, you know, his wrist caused his ankle to get hurt. But yeah, it pushes him down for me. He's like usually ninth or 10th round on a 15 teamer. Now he's going to go below a few other third basemen for sure. For me, at least.
Yeah, I'm with you. And that's the tricky part is he was starting to kind of grow on me a little bit. And all of a sudden this takes place and it's like, well, we're back to not drafting you anytime soon. But it'll be interesting to see if it's as minor as it could be, or if it really is like, hey, he can't run, like it's that bad. So yeah. I'm curious to see where it all settles. And the fact he already has the ankle injury before the season starts, we see those get retweaked real quickly. And that's kind of scary as well. The Giants have a couple fun injuries. Evan Longoria getting finger surgery. They're going to reevaluate in 10 to 14 days. And Lamont Wade Jr. will start the season on the IL as well. Does that intrigue you at all on anybody like Darren Ruff or maybe even a Wilmer Flores in these late deep drafts just to get for a couple weeks?
Yeah, Flores a little bit. I've already got him because he's multi-position and, you know, he's a pretty good platoon guy. He doesn't usually get those at bats against righties. That you might trade volume for efficiency there a little bit. But I think you're probably okay getting the extra volume from him early on. It's hard to use a guy like Flores because his platoon side is against lefties. So it's hard to see like, okay, he's going to get four starts in this half week or something like that. You know, so it has to be a pretty deep league to use him. But if he's going to play every day for the first few weeks of the season, all the better. I think Longo is going to be out for a while. Yeah. He said no swinging for 7 to 10 days, right?
Yep.
Which means tack on some more extra time there. Plus, he might be limited once he does come back.
Yeah, his deal sounds bad just for the fact we're going to have surgery and we're not going to even really look at it for like 10 days. Yeah. So, like, don't move it, basically. Yeah. That's not good. That's not good at all. All right, Andrew Vaughn, again, a guy that should be playing first base or third base, playing the outfield, dove for a ball, injured his pelvis, going to be out a couple weeks, they say. Shouldn't be a problem, but we'll see. We've seen Gavin Sheets get some run in the outfield. They just made a trade today to get, I think it was Hazley from Philadelphia.
Yeah, I think that's a sign that they expect Vaughn to be out for a while, right?
Yeah. So are you going to go Sheets, or is none of it interest you?
Three Sheets to the wind. Let's do it. Yeah. Gavin Sheets is intriguing. Pay attention to his qualifications. In many leagues, he's UT only to start the year, depending on where you play. In my league, it's 10 games, my AL home league. So all of a sudden, he had three positions. You know, and we use DH as a position, believe it or not. We're that old school, but we're just old, too. But yeah, you know, in FPC, he's UT only, so you're still limited with him to begin the season. But he'll get that eligibility pretty darn quick.
He'll get that quick. At first, I drafted him in some deep leagues hoping to get first base because he got that. I think he had like 18 games there last year, so he didn't qualify to start the season, but he would have, you know what I mean? So I could see that happening. I was scared when I saw Abreu taking reps in the outfield. I was like, do not put him out there. That's the last thing we need, Tony La Russa. But we'll see what
was
happens.
Was that a farcical tweet, or was that someone that actually
– They saw him taking reps. He was taking reps in the outfield.
I saw a tweet, but I thought it was like one of those parody Twitter.
If it is a parody, I blame Mike Kurland. So we're going to go that way.
Yeah, because it was like that. And he goes, it's good because that's his natural position or something like that, using the irony based off of Andrew Vaughn. Because, the White Sox screwed him much like the Reds screwed Nick Senzel in terms of, okay, we're going to move you off your natural position despite you being our high, high draft pick there. Take a long view, guys. Put him where he belongs and let him just develop.
Are you believing in a Senzel buyback like everyone wants to again this year?
Don't call it a comeback. I'm still there. Yeah. I didn't get him in the main though. But I think there's talent.
Yeah.
And now the cost of acquiring that talent is dirt cheap.
True.
Take some chances on that. Sure. Why not?
True. I'm with you there because I think I look every year. I have at least a couple shares in every draft of him, and it's just like it's like he's like Byron Buxton light to me. It just won't stay there. But a couple other guys here, Albert Pujols back to the Cardinals for me does nothing. But does it have any deep league relevance for you?
If you're playing like in a score sheet league or Stratomatic league, and you know you're setting the lineups and you can platoon them, he crushed lefties last year. He has uses. He's going to be there as long as they don't let him DH against right-handers. I think it's okay. Don't let send, although it's Cardinal Devil magic, they'll find a way to make him have a 950 OPS again somehow. But no, it's fun. It's a fun little story for the Cardinals. Good for them. They get, you know, it was a fun little weekend when they came back there last year, but I'm not going to draft him in any league, but good for him.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised they were willing to do it, but you know, one last run with Yachty and company, I guess is the goal there. The Oakland A's, they brought back Jed Lowrie, who was actually sneaky fantasy relevant for times last season.
Just as emotional too, of a tie there. So there you got that.
True. He's very, very emotional for that. But does he enter the chat for you as a late round, like middle infield option?
I just drafted him in a score sheet league, but again, so yeah, maybe as a platoon guy, I want to try to limit him a little bit. In our format, 5x5 roto league, I'm probably not going to draft him, but I had to add a projection for him. So there you go.
I guarantee you there will be a point this season where he's one of the more popular waiver wire pickups.
He'll be batting cleanup for the A's. Yep,
exactly. But, it'll happen. The bats will be there. Yeah. Yeah, that's he'll be there with Seth Brown and these other guys hitting 230, but hitting 20 home runs. It'll be so
Seth Brown is someone I am getting.
I am in on Seth Brown and Tony Kemp. I have way too many shares of those two, okay. It seems like. So I'm with you. Chris Archer signed with the Minnesota Twins. This, like, he's going to get the chance if he can stay healthy. This Twins team's going to score runs in a bad division. I'm not saying run to go draft him, but he might be worth a stab late in drafts potentially.
Yeah, it looks like he'll be their fifth starter. It suggests to me that they're going to take their time making a trade for another starter. I think that's a mistake. I think they should, but maybe they don't want to give up Jose Miranda to get Frankie Montas or Manaea, if that's even in the discussion. But I think they're just trying to, they've kind of reached an impasse on those trade talks is my read on that. So they had to get another arm.
Yeah, that makes sense because it seemed like they were so close at one point in time and then they just kind of went away. And that next thing you know, they're signing Chris Archer. So I think you're right. They kind of hit that wall and here we are. So let's go to battle with this. And if we have to, we'll figure it out as the season goes along. This one kind of bummed me out, but I'm not surprised by it at all. Christian Javier is going to start the season as a long man in the bullpen, which he did a lot last year. I was hoping he'd take that fifth spot because I love what he has to offer. I still think there'll be a point he gets there because Jake Odorizzi will be the number five, it looks like, for Houston with McCullers out with injury. But you can't imagine McCullers healthy for the whole season. You can't imagine Odorizzi being good enough or healthy. So yeah. Javier will get his, but how does that affect draft day for you now?
Oh, I'm pulling up my shares tool on the NFBC, and I find I actually only have one Christian Javier share. I must have him on other platforms. But I had him high in my rankings. I loved him with McCullers being out. I thought all that high strikeout upside was going to make it really kind of a fun little pick to get. And he's still useful. And again, even in some an only league, an AL only league, you can still roster him and still be fine. But in the NFBC, I mean, you're going to have to, you know, you don't know when you're going to have him active. He's one of those guys where his cumulative stats are going to look better than your experience in rostering him.
True. It's almost one of those where you have to just start him every week. Otherwise you're going to miss Chad Green. Big ones. Yeah.
Yeah. Or Loaiza, who I get Loaiza frequently. Yep. But you can't try to time the market. You just got to, okay, they've got seven games. He's in there.
The biggest thing I'd say is if he does not get drafted for some reason, like pay very close attention to that situation so you can get him earlier because
or if he gets cut in the first week or two too. Yep. Yeah.
Because he'll be very expensive because he will get his chance at some point in time. Mm-hmm. Are you buying into Jesus Luzardo, who has been a monster this spring? Looks like this whole new guy. Threw his curveball more than his fastball his last outing. It was just phenomenal.
It's more than one outing now. Yeah,
no, I can't even downplay it anymore.
Yeah, I missed a chance to trade for him maybe on the cheap or at least before his price went up in a league that was a keeper league. So, yeah, I'm intrigued. And the thing is, we were all intrigued with the idea when the Marlins made the deal, right? I mean, we were like, okay, yeah, I can see that. They gave up Starling Marte for 2 months, but they've got a potential ace now. But then he continued to do his thing in Miami, which is the same in Oakland, and have a 6 ERA. And we're like, okay, I can safely write him off. Players aren't chess pieces. They don't have static value. They change all the time. Looks like they fixed something with him.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I was happy to see him kind of go home, get to a place that knew how to deal with pitchers and see what he could do. It's been 8 2/3 innings, so let's hope for the best. But it, so far, it's looked good. On the same note, are you is Mitch Keller doing it? He did it for the third start today. Like, he's just looking phenomenal.
Another guy, I just improved his projection today. I'm a little slow on that. You know, I didn't buy the hype video in the during the lockout there, but when you back it up with good outings, now I'm okay. I'll buy it a little bit more. I'm just waiting for a way for the Pirates to screw him up, but
bingo.
I wouldn't mind drafting him a couple of times. I haven't drafted him yet.
Yeah, his ADP's climbing. He's a guy that's burned many of us in the past. So
sure,
it'll be interesting to see how this one rolls here. But Lizardo, Keller, there's a handful of them. Verlander looks great right now.
Yeah.
And then Noah Syndergaard, who I had next up on the list, looked phenomenal in his first start. I believe he threw 60 pitches, 3 2/3 innings. And Joe Maddon came out today and, you know, it could just be coach speak for all we know. He said there will not be an innings limit on him, which I find kind of hard to believe. You just, you know, got this guy over here. We'll see. I was kind of avoiding Thor in all drafts. What are you doing, or what's your interest in Noah Syndergaard during the drafts now?
It's tepid. It's like dipping my toe in the water with that. I will say this about Maddon. When he's not busy inventing baseball again, he is kind of accurate in what he says. Last year, he said there would be no restrictions on Ohtani. You know, we might even have him hit on days he pitches. It happened.
Yeah.
Ohtani had an amazing year. Should have been paying a little bit more attention to that, maybe.
That's very true. I'm still, like you said earlier, I'm kind of a risk-averse drafter, so I'm kind of scared to take Syndergaard still. But, man, it's like we know what he can do if he can stay healthy. And that division, and now that the A's are doing what the A's are doing, it just makes those starts even better. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out for sure.
I'll say this. We were covering the FSGA's Best Ball League draft today on the RotoWire show on Sirius XM. And the same team drafted Severino, Thor, and Sale. The three TGS guys from spring training of 2020. Talk about boom or bust. Could be like three aces he could have, or he can have 30 innings total. I mean, you just don't know, really. But
that's a wild one. That'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Best ball might be the format to try that in. Let's put it that way.
As we always like to say, better in best ball. Sometimes it's actually true, though. Marquez definitely is true.
Much better in best ball. Definitely, definitely true. So we'll see how that one plays out. A few more here. Bryson Stott, the big-time prospect for the Phillies. Looks like now he might lock in as the everyday third baseman, getting Alec Baum out of the way. I didn't think Bryson Stott had a chance to start the season with the Phillies, but now it looks like there's a really good chance he starts the season with the Phillies. Is that moving him up the boards for you at all?
Yeah, a little bit. He had a pretty good Arizona Fall League. I don't really know what to make out of this, but I also don't think that Didi is an everyday player. I think he needs some time off here and there too. So you could still see some time at shortstop, and that way Baum still is part of the picture. It improves their defense a lot. Phillies defense, we can make all the jokes, but I have been that one guy, but Baum, Didi, they're below average defensive players. I mean, Hoskins is a terrible defender. Castellanos is a terrible defender. Schwarber, you know, at least one of them has a DH slot, but this is a team full of butchers, so getting Stott in there actually helps improve that defense a lot.
It's the beer league softball team with every guy that's got at least one knee brace, and he's just out there because they can score 16 runs, but they pray they only give up 14. That's what this team's. They're not there to play defense at all. It's hilarious to watch.
Some strikeout pitchers, that's for sure.
All I know is the bleacher seats should cost a lot of money this year if they want to really make some cash, because there'll be a lot of balls out there.
So for sure,
that'll be fun. One of the last things I have for you here is back to the closers notes. You mentioned the joke on the Rays, like what are the Rays going to do earlier? Well, it's like you have all these pieces in place, but now Peter Fairbanks might be out for a while, which kind of takes one of the bigger options out of the way for Andrew Kittredge, who still, you know, he had 8 saves last year. Projection sites have him for 19 or 20. Those are just projections, of course.
Yeah,
but he's going super late in drafts. Does he interest you a bit more now?
Yeah, I always feel like a twinge of regret when someone takes Kittredge, because he's also going to get you some wins too. I've only got him projected for like 7 or 8 saves, but that's only because it's the Rays being Rays. But, you know, I feel like maybe I should,
I'm probably going to update that projection, but FireEisen's another guy. Chargeois is another guy. Whistler, I think at one point we were all thinking that magical slider of his was going to get a chance to close some games out too. You know, Posh might be coming back this year. There's options for them. It's just that they seem to grow on trees in Tampa. So that's the one thing, is they're good at developing relief pitcher types. So I still have some interest in Kittredge, but I'm probably behind the field on that one. But even though he is cheap, I do feel like every time he goes, I'm like, oh, yeah, I can see that. That makes sense. And then I scroll down and cross him off because he's usually lower. But he went in the 13th in my main event. Scott Davis, who I've got a side bet with, round of golf, actually. He came and proposed that to me before the draft. I like how he did it before the draft, not after. Yeah. But he didn't say, oh, your team sucks so bad. Let's do a round of golf. But no, it's cool because it's a course called Oak Quarry. If you ever get down here, Bubba, we're going to have to play there.
Is that the one you said is your favorite one?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's out east of me. It's out in Riverside, but it's a great track.
I'll have to check it out. I always like playing new courses. That's one of my favorite things to do, is kind of drive somewhere and try something new. I've gone as far as Santa Barbara, so I'm always willing to try some fun ones.
Well, that's halfway to me. Yeah, Santa Barbara, right?
It's mid ground. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So we'll get together at some point for sure.
I'm bringing my clubs to Arizona this year, so I will be golfing in Arizona. That's happening.
Super. Yeah. I like it.
But one more question before we get to the listener questions I have for you. Red's question. Tyler Stevenson, I am so torn on this individual. Mm-hmm. Like, as someone that follows the team like you do, is he worth being one of the top catchers off the board? Is he going to be that massive powers, not massive, like 20 potential 20 home run guy that everybody hopes he can be?
Well, I think I've since moved him down a little bit because they torn up the roster up around him. You know, when Tucker Barnhart left, that's fine. That mean more playing time for Stevenson. But you take away Winker, an on-base guy around him, Suarez, and, you know, a guy that can maybe knock him in, or at least, you know, is another guy that could take some walks here and there. You take those guys away, and what are you left with? And I think the counting stats aren't going to justify the price. Now, Stevenson actually went cheaper. I'm pulling up my board to see exactly where he went in the 13th round. In fact, one pick before Kittredge. There you go. That's a reasonable price. That's like 190. I'm okay with that. Actually, no, did I get that right? Yeah, it's in that range. So that's pretty reasonable. I can get on board with that. Earlier when he was going around 140, not so much.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was for a while there. You either had to take him as an early catcher too, if you went like Realmuto, or he was your catcher one. And it was one of those like, what are you doing? But now you can wait on him a bit and it becomes a little more intriguing to me now. So that's why I wanted to get your thoughts on
an early catcher, I'm not going to take him though.
True.
That's the thing. If I get an early catcher, we're talking really early, like Will Smith or Realmuto, which I get a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm not taking another catcher till a 20 plus round. You know, if I can get Jacob Stallings as my second, a guy that plays a lot, all the better.
That's
a
great one. Yep.
You know, Barnhart's another one that's just fine. Mm-hmm. Cromulent. I'm not going to spend those team picks on a catcher.
Okay. It makes sense. Seeing how different people draft differently is so much fun, because there's so many ways to put it together. And that's kind of the fun of it. Cause, like, you know, Toby, he likes to take, you know, Realmuto early, as we all know, but he likes to like back it up with a stud right away. It's almost like he wants like two starters, a closer, two catchers. Like, it's like his deal. But you can wait on catchers, you can piece it together like you did. It's a lot of fun ways to put it all together. Let's get some listener questions here. Benny Dykstra asks, the following hitters are not being drafted in 15-team leagues, like Casas, Stott, Duran, Prado, Thomas, a bunch of like prospects. Which of them are you willing to drop a good amount of fab on if they get the call? So what are some of these potential prospects you're interested in once they get the call? Little Neil Cruz in there now while you're at it, if you want.
Yeah, I guess. I wonder how much his ADP drops this weekend.
It'll be fun to see.
I think he'll still get drafted though.
Yeah, because I think most people today were like, it's only like a 2-week thing, but most people are speculating. So we'll see.
Yeah, they don't know though.
Yeah, it's all speculation.
I don't know. Stott's going to get drafted now too with this news. I think it just depends on what the situation they're stepping into here. Like Casas, you know, he could step right into a starting job if they decide that Dahlbeck's not the guy, or it could be a platoon, in which case, yeah. Prado, I think once they call him up, he's going to play every day. It might be to say goodbye to Carlos Santana. So
yeah.
And it might be him. I think Duran is another guy that people spent a lot of fab money on, and he kind of crapped the bed. Now he's going to begin the year in the minors. He he's going to have to tear it up in AAA, and even then it might not be good enough because the Red Sox don't really have any room in the end. Yes. With them signing Story, that pushes Enrique Hernandez out to the outfield. They don't really have a spot for Durant, barring injuries or another trade.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because they came out this week already and they said they want Enrique to lead off, which we kind of expected, I guess. Mm-hmm. But then when lefties are on the mound, JD is going to start in the outfield and Jackie Bradley is going to sit. And then when righties are on the mound, JD will DH and Jackie Bradley will go to the outfield. So I thought that was pretty interesting. So you'll keep that outfield eligibility with JD, which is pretty nice as well.
Yeah, that's pretty handy.
But I'm with you on Prado. That's one of the guys I've been circling in a lot of DCs and everything early in the draft season because he's got power speed that could translate pretty nicely whenever they do decide to, you know, pass the torch, as you said.
Right.
Liam at Freed Minds asks, who is the last pitcher you guys would be comfortable to have as an SP1? I find I wait around to round 4 or 5. He's able to get like Peralta or Musgrove after loading up on hitters. So who's like the end of your SP1 for you?
He mentioned it. Musgrove. That's who I got. Musgrove. I think Cease, I'm kind of warming up to. Toby took him one spot ahead. Trevor Rogers, if I'm really in a pinch, or Logan Webb. Musgrove is my favorite of that tier. I throw Gausman at the back end of that. I'm not as down on Gausman as like Scott Jenstad, my podcast co-host is. But it's in that range. Once I get that, I'm getting an SP2 next round. I got Manoah in the main. Musgrove and Manoah is how I paired them up. I love Manoah this year. And I think next year he'll be an SP1. It's Musgrove, probably that range. 5-6, 4-5, 5-6, you know, that 4-5 turn, like at beginning of the fifth is about as late as I want to wait.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I think I try to, like, Peralta, I have a lot of SP1s for me. That's kind of my range.
Yeah.
So a pretty similar spot. I think the Manoah comment is very, very intriguing because I'm with you there. I wonder if a lot of his ADP right now is people concerned still with potential workload. That's my only guess. Which
AL East also maybe.
Yeah, that's true. That's true as well. But
Baltimore all of a sudden is now a better place to pitch. So yeah,
which is crazy. But watch him put the humidor in so the ball flies out now. But that would be a Baltimore thing to do.
Yeah.
Marty asks at Beamer_cleaner, do you like both Gibson and Odorizzi at the end of your pitching rotation? Kyle Gibson and Odorizzi.
I'm gonna try to fab Odorizzi just because he is available in ours. Yeah. You know, he's got a role right now, which I just got to figure out who my draft's going to be by Sunday. It might not be a draft. I did draft Gibson in the 25th, so I like Gibson better.
Yeah, I'm team Kyle Gibson as well. I don't mind Odorizzi as a stream, kind of like how you're talking about picking him up, but Gibson's a guy I can see me rostering more often than not.
Will say this. We're going to get better defense out of Houston than we are Philly. You're going to get a good team behind you. But we did the Odorizzi game last year, and it really wasn't a game. It was more of a nightmare.
Yeah, it was scary. Very, very scary. Great team to stack against in DFS. John Wilder asked, you kind of hit on it, I think, on Twitter. Nick Kroll said he wants to eliminate peaks and valleys as a fellow Reds fan. Can you please let me know what peaks the GM is talking about?
That was my tweet. That was the tweet. All right. You know, it's like when he said that like a week ago, it's just so aggravating there. So, yep. Thanks for teeing me up again on that Reds angst. Yeah, I'm bummed.
Yeah, I feel for you. Like when I listened to you and Scott talk A's and Reds, I was like, yeah, as a Dolphins fan, I kind of get it, even though my guys just disappoint me all the time because they're like just good enough to be bad, which is always frustrating. Mike Carter asks, who is one player over ADP 350 that has really grown on you that you didn't expect to grow on you?
I didn't think there'd be homework here, but
Dr. Mike Carter always has these.
How about Jake Fraley? I was happy to grab him in the main. I don't know. You know, he might platoon. Actually, that might be a problem. But ballpark improvement is just, you know, going from Seattle to Cincy, it doesn't get much better than that. He's going to steal some bases, too. And he's going to play more than Cincy than he would have in Seattle. So that's a guy that has grown on me a little bit, that I grabbed him in the main event as well.
Yeah, I guess I could just go with my standard answer that people laugh at me for. But I'll stick by my guns. My this year's Robbie Ray that's grown on me, which I never thought I would like, is Patrick Corbin. So
Why do you like him now?
The fastball increased last year, let alone this year in spring. It's our is swinging strike rates like 18% given spring small
circle. That's a good stat. It's not like you're citing ERA in eight innings. You're talking about something that's a little bit more tangible.
He's effective right now. And with him, a lot of it's just the slider usage. If you go back to his game logs last year, when the slider usage was high, he was doing very well. When it wasn't, he was not, because his fastball was just getting torched. So if the fastball gets better, the slider usage a little better, there's like an avenue for something very, very good, at least at ADP past 350. It's a long shot, but it's a guy we've seen do it before also. And the Nationals have no reason not to throw him as much as he possibly can. So
that's also true.
Again, grasping at straws, but it's past pick 350.
That's what you do past 350.
Yeah. It was so funny when you said, somebody said, like, whenever you're drafting, you almost have Jeff Zimmerman's voice in your head, innings pitched, at bats. That's what you're always thinking. Well, Corbin's going to get a ton of innings. Now, what's he going to do with them is the question. Mm-hmm. And I think that could translate. So, yes, it's a massive spec, but it's out there. And the last question we have here is from Dave Mendelson from the Triple Play Pod. If you were to call your shot for the most saves in the San Diego and Seattle bullpens, who do you think leads each team in saves?
When Toby drafted Denelson Lamet, I felt a twinge of regret. I always thought it was going to be Robert Suarez, but you're also paying a heavier price for Suarez. I'll say Lamet's the guy now. I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen an announcement. Have you?
No, they haven't announced anything. Lamet and Pierce Johnson are the two I've been taking the value on. Mm-hmm. But I have no idea what they're doing there.
Yeah, I've for Seattle, I still say it's Ken Giles.
Yeah.
And he's cheap. But the problem is he could get you zero because he might not be able to pitch. You know, that's the thing. But he was throwing 95 in bullpen sessions. They've already said they're going to committee, but you're not going to see Ken Giles as a fireman coming out in the seventh inning, let alone throw multiple innings. We have seen that with Seawald. He had five multi-inning appearances, more than three outs at least. I don't know about a full two innings, but five appearances last year where he was asked to get more than an inning worth of outs. Steckenrider is probably my second choice there. Seawald's the best pitcher perhaps, but usage is different with him. Steckenrider is perfectly useful, though, too. He's a good pitcher. And so is Castillo. We'll see about Munoz. Yeah, they do. I'd rank them Giles, Steckenrider, Seawald, Castillo fourth.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. The biggest thing I'll agree with is I think Giles is the guy. You could see Castillo throw in the eighth because he has. You could see Steckenrider throw the seventh because he has. Seawald could throw the sixth, seventh for all we care. Like, they don't mm-hmm. care either. And he should because he is that good.
Yeah.
So I do think it's Giles' deal. Giles is a lot like Craig Kimbrell. You take him out of that ninth, I wouldn't be shocked if we see the same results the White Sox saw with Kimbrell taking him out of that closing role.
Yeah.
Some guys are just bred differently up between the years that they're just – they got to be in that ninth inning. So I'm with you on Giles. He's very, very cheap.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Jeff, it's always a pleasure. We're going to wrap things up there before we head on out. You have a ton of things between, you know, your golf podcast, your baseball podcast, your radio. Plug it all for RotoWire.
Sure. Thank you. Appreciate that. So first of all, check us out on RotoWire. RotoWire.com/free gets you that free 10-day trial. We don't require a credit card. You hopefully want to subscribe, and that's all we ask. If you don't want to subscribe after that, it just expires. Very easy. Just have to have a valid email address. You can follow me on Twitter @Jeff_Erickson. That's ERICKSON. You can also listen to me on a lot of podcasts. I talk too much. I'm on SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio Sundays from 10 to 12 West Coast time. That's AM. And then on Monday through Thursday, 9 to 11 out here, Pacific time, 12 to 2 Eastern time. And then, of course, you can catch me on various other things. I do a golf podcast on Wednesday. And luckily a lot of people want me to talk. So I'll pop up elsewhere here and there too. And three baseball pods, one with Scott Jenstad, one with Fred Zinke tonight at 5 o'clock Pacific. I'll do one with Fred. And then it's a guest of the week every Thursday.
Yeah. Jeff does awesome work. He doesn't want me to tell you that, but the one thing I will say is the Scott and Jeff Sunday night is obviously the staple, but I want to give total props to you and Fred. It gets better and better, because I know you guys have done it for a while now, but like I think last year is when you guys really started back again for the first, I can't remember, it's recently, but just Fred's baseball mind is so amazing. Sharp. And yeah. so I love that show. Like, it's so good. I don't think it gets as much love as it should get. So I wanted to bring that one up. Fred is just amazing stuff.
Fred is one of the best fantasy baseball players out there, period. He's also one of the best fantasy traders out there. Yes. People don't realize, if you play in a trade league, hit Fred up. He is the guy that can give you the best advice on that. And he's just super nice. He's Canadian, yeah. So it's you know, national law. But it's true. He is a super great guy too.
I just wanted to bring it up because he's just so quiet. Like, you don't even really know his Twitter presence. He just kind of does his thing, but he's super sharp. So people should go check it out. But
for sure.
All right, Jeff, we'll wrap it up there. Again, thanks for joining me as always.
Thanks for having me.
Everybody, this is Bench with Bubba, episode 456 with Jeff Erickson of RotoWire. Catch you all later.
Life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance, because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote? Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.